You're listening to the Liberty News Radio Network, and this is the Political Cesspool. The Political Cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, and here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
Third and final hour of a fast-paced and fun show. You're in the Political Cesspool with James Edwards and Keith Alexander this Saturday evening, January the 28th. The first month of the new year is already done. I mean, where'd that go?
Time flies when you're having fun.
You got that right. Well, one of the things we're going to be talking about this hour is our latest exchanges with the media. And a couple of these exchanges have just been sort of comical. We're going to get into that first, but immediately after, Cody from Texas chimes in. We've had some people trying to get in on the show tonight. We don't take calls as much as we should, but we'll take this one. Cody in Texas, how are you?
Hey, James. How are you doing tonight?
I'm great.
Good. I was wanting to call in and talk about the all the people talking about the Muslim ban and all this stuff, and which is not a Muslim ban. It's extreme vetting, but I was like to... if I could, read the 8 U.S. Code 1182, Inadmissible Aliens, which is, it's real short, but it's completely constitutional. And it says, suspension of entry or imposition of restrictions by a president. And it's just a few words, James. I'll go through it real quick. It's not long. Whenever the president finds that entry of any aliens or of any class of aliens into the United States would be detrimental to the interests of the United States, he may, by proclamation and for such period as he shall deem necessary, suspend the entry of all aliens or any class of aliens as immigrants or non-immigrants, or impose on the entry of aliens any restrictions he may deem appropriate. And I just, that's the Constitution. They're all saying that this is unconstitutional, but it's completely constitutional, and it's in there, and it gives the president the complete right to do this. And I would like to know what y'all's thoughts on that is.
Cody, thank you for the call. I tell you what, the Trump administration, I don't even think they've rolled out anything as succinct as what Cody just shared with this audience that defends their position any better than that. Cody, thank you for calling in and bringing up that very vital point.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah. Cody, let me say this. This is Keith. This is just more proof of the mantra that we've been expressing on this show, that there's no need for new laws in order to affect the Trump agenda. All the laws are in place. They've just been ignored by both the Bush administration, the Clinton administration, and the Obama administration over the past 20 or so years. And now we can get back on track and start enforcing the laws, just like the hate crime laws could apply to protect whites against black criminal depredation, just like the Civil Rights Act of 64 could be used to prosecute anti-white racial discrimination like affirmative action. Likewise, 1182, that statute that you were quoting to us, can be used to justify the singling out of Muslims from certain terror-prone countries and subjecting them to special extreme vetting. This is, everything is in place. All it takes is the will to power. We need to have the will. We need somebody in the presidency and in the executive branch that has the will to go forward and prosecute what are clear violations of the law or clear powers that the government has to protect the American citizen.
And I'll tell you, Trump has shown that he has the will to make people bend. And you already have seen the city of Miami get down on its knees in submission. And so you're going to see more than that. And Trump is really setting the tone that he
is why the left is going nuts.
His will will be done on these issues. And Cody, again, I can't thank you enough for calling in with that very vital piece of information. Thank you so much.
Thank you, James.
Well, you're very welcome. Back to the media. Well, I'll tell you what. We'll try to work this in very quickly, and then we'll move on. I don't know if we'll cram it all in this segment. But this was mentioned last week. So everyone knows that Jared and Taylor and I were seated in the front section with the media at the inauguration in Washington last week, just a few feet away from President Trump. Now, while the crowd of citizens in the mall behind us were very vocal in their approval of Trump's address, it was eerily quiet in the press area. In fact, the only time the prostitutes clapped at all was when Hillary Clinton was introduced earlier that morning. Now, we mentioned some of this last week with Sean Bergen. But as you know, if you listened last week, I felt the spirit move me and the need to liven up our area at the conclusion of President Trump's remarks. So I stood up and offered a full-throated endorsement by shouting, quite respectfully, "Give 'em hell, Donald." And as one might expect, an enterprising reporter sitting literally 1 foot behind us took notice.
Shocked.
Shocked that anybody in that section would cheer Trump for sure, but wrote a story about it. Now, his story wasn't entirely accurate. I'm the one who stood up. Jared Taylor never stood up. I'm the one who said it. Jared didn't. And I don't care who gets the headlines for that. You know I shunned the press. But it was just funny. What's funny about it is this. Now, we covered this story last week. I'll give you the rest of the story, what you don't know, things that have happened since last week, a little follow-up on that story. So, number one, it's really hard to mistake Jared Taylor now. He has hair. I don't. I'm a little younger. He's a little thinner.
Totally different speech patterns.
Well, I mean, the fact that one of us stood up, one of us did. Anyway, and the fact that he talked to us, and then the fact that this reporter was a foot behind us.
They can't get it right, even when they're right there on the scene.
Well, Jared actually added this to his website this week. This reporter was sitting right behind. Well, actually, it was the American Renaissance editor Henry Wolf wrote this. This reporter was sitting right behind Jared Taylor at the inauguration. However, he got a crucial fact wrong. Mr. Taylor didn't stand up and say, "Give him hell, Donald." That was James Edwards of the Political Cesspool, who was sitting right next to Mr. Taylor. The Philadelphia Inquirer also got the hat wrong, and they mentioned in detail what kind of hat Jared was wearing. They described it as canvas. They described it as felt. It was canvas, not felt. It's black, not forest green. And it was a waterproof rain hat, not a fedora. So much for eyewitness reporting. But here's the thing about it, Keith. This is the kicker. And Jared and I were laughing about this and remarking that you can't even trust the media to report accurately on an event that happens right under its nose. The kicker is this. Jared Taylor emailed that reporter to set the record straight. The reporter never emailed him back. Jared did that reporter Twitter handle. The reporter never tweeted back. Several people, I actually went to this story. There was at least a dozen comments in the comment section from either Political Cesspool listeners or American Renaissance readers who said, "Hey, the story's wrong. It was Edwards, not Taylor." The story has still not been changed. Again, it's a very minor thing. I don't care. Jared can get the credit. I wasn't there to get the credit. I was just there to support the president. But the point is this. He's been notified by Twitter, by email, by several comments in the comment section, and no retraction, no revision to the story, no acknowledgement that he got it wrong. It just, heck, the story sounded better if it was Jared, so we're going to leave it. It doesn't matter what the facts are. This is something that's just, it's trivial in its essence, but it just goes to show this is how the media operates.
Well, it shows their devotion to accuracy, that they are always ballyhooing. They're these great objective journalists. They are above the fray. They are totally principled in every way. But on the other hand, they ignore facts that are shoved right under their nose, and they can't report on facts that happen right in front of their eyes.
And then when they're informed that a crucial element of the story was wrong, they just outright ignore it. Outright ignore it.
No wonder we call them the prostitutes.
We got to take a break. A couple of more interactions, recent interactions with the press that I'll fill you up on. Then Keith has some interesting topics that he's brought into the studio for this third hour. We'll let him share those with you as well before we finish up.
We fought. We learned. We struggled. We won. Despite Obama's best efforts, the newspaper of the human resistance survives. We have lived only to face a new nightmare, the war against the machines. Read about our struggle in The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. The Sovereign is a 24-page monthly tabloid newspaper about the war between man and machines. We've tried reason, we've tried legislation. We've tried every peaceful means imaginable, and all it's gotten us is shut out. So now we fight the machines. Order online today at thesovnews.com or find The Sovereign at select newsstands. Remember to read The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. The human resistance's battle against the machines will be everlasting. This is mercy. It was never our destiny to stop the age of Obama. It was merely to survive it. together. Together.
My sister was smoking, and I watched her. She asked me if I wanted some, and I said sure, and she taught me how to smoke, and that was my first experience.
Every day, an estimated 3,000 teens start smoking.
Both my parents smoke. I mean, seeing them smoke, watching them, thinking, well, they do it, it's not going to hurt me.
Smoking sends mixed messages to your children.
They just recently found out. I just told my mom, so she was shocked, very shocked.
I think parents have a big influence on whether or not their children smoke, because even if the parent says that they don't agree with it, it really doesn't hold a lot of water. I mean, you can say, I don't agree with you smoking, but when you light up 5 minutes later, it doesn't hold a lot of water.
Smoking. If you think you're old enough to start, you're smart enough to stop. A public service message from this station and the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
Many of you have heard me talk about my Vigor score. You say, Sam, what on earth is all this Vigor stuff about? Well, Vigor is defined as zest for life, your strength in body and mind, your energy levels. It's kind of all wrapped into a term called Vigor. Would you like to improve your Vigor score? Well, you got to first take the free test. Get a hold of Kurt, C-U-R-T, at LibertyRoundtable.com or call Kurt Cosby at 801-669-2211. I took the test, got a 13 out of 32. Horrible, huh? But I worked on it with Kurt with some natural help and healing, and before you know it, now I've got an astounding 29 out of 32 on the Vigor score. Can you tell by the way I talk? Oh, yes, my zest for life has never been better. Get a hold of Kurt Cosby. That's 801-669-2211 and take your free Vigor test today, and you can learn where you stand. And then you can work on improving it and take the test again. And, oh, compare the results. You will be delighted. Get a hold of Kurt Cosby. Kurt, C-U-R-T, at LibertyRoundtable.com or 801-669-2211 for your free Vigor score test today.
Get on the show and speak with James and the gang, call us toll-free at 1-866-986-6397. And now, back to tonight's show.
A couple of other things with the media that we're going to cover very quickly. There's always something going on with the media in this show, you know that. But I mentioned to you a couple of weeks ago, and I never did follow up with you on this, that there was a certain television production that reached out to me asking if I would like to be the voice of the alt-right with regard to terrorism and specifically Dylann Roof. So you already know what's going on there. I'm being set up to be, connection.
The next Nazi.
Yeah, to be the connection from Dylann Roof and the legitimate ideas that motivate people like us. So my initial inclination is to do as I most often do, if it's not live television or radio, is to reject it. And then I asked them if they'd compensate me, because this is a major production. This isn't just a one-off interview. This is a major television series for a major television network. And so, well, if they could pay me enough money, maybe I would consider it. And then they said, well, we don't do that. We want to come get some B-roll footage at your radio station, and we might give you a little licensing fee, something of that nature. Well, I actually reached out to a professional actor, and it's no one you know. It's not Sonny Landham, who is a good friend of ours, who was certainly a Hollywood movie star in the 80s. This is someone that's off the radar, but he is a supporter of this radio program, and he makes his living as a paid professional actor. And he's been in movies. He's been in all kinds of stuff, major movies. And so he knows the industry, and I sent him everything that this network had sent me, and this is what he wrote back. Hi, James. When I read your email, my gut said no, but then I checked out the website of the production company, and then it shouted no. They produce crap and cancer, but then why should they be different than from the rest of the media? I didn't tell you this, ladies and gentlemen, but it was the History Channel that reached out to me. And since I'm not doing it now, I don't owe them any loyalty oath. That exchange is over. But it was the History Channel, and this person picked up on that from having that privileged information. As you may know, the History Channel is also called the Nazi Channel, because without Hitler, it'd be out of business. I can see already the lighting, music, and graphics that they would surround you with, and how they do everything to Photoshop you into an SS uniform. They'll try to link you and us to domestic terrorism. The most powerful movie stars get final edit approval because they know how the film is edited makes all the difference. So if you could get final edit approval on your sequence and not just the raw interview footage, but preferably after all post-production effects have been added, then you would have a fighting chance of controlling your image. However, I doubt very much that they would give you that power. I know the cliche is there's no such thing as bad publicity, but I also know the cliche, mud sticks. Our enemy is desperate to defame leaders like yourself who don't fit their knuckle-dragging stereotype. You embody everything they hate and wish to destroy. You have a major career in media, and if you want it at the highest level, you could seek elected office. Obviously, to do either, you must enter the arena, but boxers try to get the ring and glove size that suit their styles. And he's exactly right. And we've made our way, my way is, I think Donald Trump danced to that last week with Melania. And I can't tell you who this guy is, obviously, but I respect the heck out of him. And we exchange correspondence really on a weekly basis. But he knows the industry. And that was my gut feeling. And then he knows the players here. And he told me how that would probably go down. And I think he was right. So I rejected it. But it just goes to show that the History Channel, when they reach out to you, you're on the radar of some major people, Keith. And I think they ended up getting Richard Spencer to actually take that that interview.
Yeah, if you want to be a pinata, just, you know, sign on for that. I remember when you signed on to that Swedish television production where they wanted you to be the spokesman for white advocacy. And I think you're on the screen a total of 30 seconds out of
Well, that's the other way they do it. If they don't do what would probably have been the case here, bad lighting, scary, ominous music, horrific graphics, and
photoshopping, put some horns on your head.
All of that. I mean, they can get creative in their editing and the way they take things out of context, or they can do as they did in that situation where I was supposed to be featured in every episode of that series, and instead of being featured in every episode, I was only featured in one episode, and even then for 36 seconds. And that's after 2 days of filming and several hours of filming. So there's a lot of things they could do, but none of it seems to be worth my time.
That's why James asked to be paid. He knows that if he could get paid for 2 days' worth of work.
And the History Channel's not hurting for money. It's different when it's a mom-and-pop production company or you're doing an interview. But it's also different when you're traveling to do business with or to do an interview with one of the biggest cable news, not cable news, but one of the biggest cable channels on the dial.
Well, you mentioned Donald Trump and Melania dancing to Frank Sinatra's My Way. As a Southerner and as a Memphian, James, I would correct you to say that was Elvis Presley's signature song,
very
too.
Very good, very right. good. Yeah. Oh, yes, 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 yes. Hey, one more thing with the regard to the media. So we turned down the History Channel. I got an interview request the other 2 days ago that I am going to do. And this is actually one interview. And this is the first time I can say this for a while, unless it's an interview with the Liberty Roundtable, that I am looking forward to doing. I just can't wait to do it. I got an email from a woman who wants to interview me and seek my opinion on journalistic ethics. Now, that is one. I'm going to tell you what. I'm going to start talking. This isn't bragging. It's not bragging if it's true. I've lived nine lives in the media. And Keith, this show has opened our eyes to the way the media works. And so-called ethics.
We've been victims of the dirty trick squad.
We have forgotten more about the way media works than most people will ever know. And we've been through some pretty interesting affairs. So I'm going to, when I get on the phone with this woman and she asked me my thoughts on journalistic ethics, I'm going to start talking and I'm not going to stop until she hangs up the phone. And I'm going to unload on everything that I've been put through. And I'm going to say, do you think it's ethical when the New York Times flies down to interview me and then I don't fit the stereotype and they end up putting in a felon in my role? Do you think it's ethical for them to take a quote from a black reporter and say I'm a slavery-defending advocate when Donald Trump
when
Jr.
talks to me?
When
you're making a commentary on that man's report.
God, there's so much I can get into. And I'm going to give it all to her. I can tell you that. So that's one. That's interesting. And it's interesting that they chose somebody who has been so maligned by the press to comment on the treachery of the press.
You're going to wind up on the cutting room floor again if that's what –
That's fine.
You better get paid for doing it.
It's going to be therapeutic in this case. It's fine. If they don't use any of it, I'm gonna rant in that ear for as long as she leaves it open. So that's coming up. We'll see if that goes anywhere. But even if it's a waste of time, it's going to be cathartic. Okay, Red Ice. We did an interview with Red Ice. I did do an interview with Red Ice. Red Ice has been good to me, and Sam Bushman's good to me, and Red Ice is good to me. They're the only two people I go to regularly. But after Trump's inauguration, Jared Taylor did a couple of interviews. I did a couple of interviews. Red Ice TV was one of them. I did an interview with Sam Bushman also while I was up there in Washington. And then Sam was on our show for that powerhouse performance last week with Sam Bushman and Sean Bergen in with me for the full 3 hours. Jared Taylor and Bill Johnson did some guest appearances. But right after the swearing in, Red Ice TV was hosting an Inauguration Day special. So, and Red Ice TV's Inauguration Day special featured original interviews, Man on the Street reports, and protest footage from across the country. I think the best part of it, other than, of course, the couple of minutes that I was featured, was, now, in all seriousness, the best part of it for me was being able to get a load of what the people who are opposing Donald Trump look like. Now, it's all included in this video. We posted it to our website, thepoliticalcesspool.org, on January 25th, a couple of days ago. You can watch the whole thing. It's 50 minutes long. It includes special appearances by yours truly, Jared Taylor, Nathan D'Amigo, Emily Yukas, and Richard Spencer. But it also includes this protest footage. Folks, you've got to see the degeneracy on display here by these people who oppose Trump. One of these women had a sign. She's about 400 pounds. She's protesting Trump. The sign reads, "My menstrual blood will flow through the streets fighting for women of all genders." Wrap your mind around that as we go to the commercial break.
I'm sure she has plenty of it.
We're back right after this.
Pursuing liberty, using the Constitution as our guide. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
With news this hour from LibertyNewsDaily.com, I'm William Grigg.
President Trump's repeated claim that the country is under siege by violent crime is not sustained by the available data, argues Eric Beam of Reason magazine. Nor is the president's threat to federalize law enforcement in Chicago warranted by that city's admittedly shocking rate of violent crime. While Chicago saw more than 300 murders in the first half of 2016, according to the most recent FBI Uniform Crime Report, the city's per capita murder rate actually is not one of the worst in the country, Beam writes. That dishonor, at least for the first 6 months of 2016, belongs to St. Louis, Missouri, which had more than 27 murders for every 100,000 residents. That's more than double Chicago's murder rate of 11.6 per 100,000 residents. Both Orlando, Florida, and Baltimore, Maryland had rates above 20 per 100,000 during the same period, according to the FBI's tabulation. Opinion polls consistently show that a majority of voters believe that crime has increased since 2008. Among those who voted for Trump, 78% held to that belief. The truth, Beam observes, is that violent crime fell by 19% and property crime fell by 23% between 2008 and 2015, as measured, once again, by the FBI from data collected from more than 18,000 jurisdictions nationwide. Despite widespread alarmism over a supposed uptick in the crime rate, gun-related homicides, one of the most important metrics, are down more than 40% from their peak in the early 1990s.
For commentary and insights on a troubled world, visit Joel Skousen's worldaffairsbrief.com. For LibertyNewsDaily.com, I'm William Grigg.
Are you sick and tired of just being sick and tired? Are you sick and tired of being told that you are somehow privileged? Are you sick and tired of being told to shut up, both at work and at school? Are you sick and tired of panhandlers pestering you whenever you go out to shop or to eat? Are you sick and tired of jobs that never come and an economy that never goes anywhere? Are you sick and tired of having to take orders from incompetence? Are you sick and tired of movies and television shows that depict a white man as a bumbling incompetent? Are you sick and tired of a government that welcomes non-white immigrants and exposes you to diseases? If you are sick and tired of being sick and tired, then the American Freedom Party is for you. Connect with us theamericanfreedomparty.us. Once again, theamericanfreedomparty.us.
Welcome back. To get on the show, call us on James's Dime at 1-866-986-6397.
Okay, Keith has brought in, as he is wont to do, a couple of articles from the local fish wrap here in Memphis, the Commercial Appeal. And several people had sent me this first story. We hadn't had time to work it in yet. But basically what it is, there's this high school senior, very attractive, blonde-haired, white female, and she's dating a black male. And she goes to the most expensive all-girls school in Memphis. I think the tuition there is between $20,000 and $30,000 a year. And her parents put the foot down to this relationship. They said, we don't want you dating a black person, basically, which is their right to do. Certainly, we want to have children who look like us, who...
And grandchildren.
Who share our tradition and culture. Ironically, it is actually people like us who are the true advocates for diversity. If all of the races of mankind mix and you have an amalgamation of some mocha-colored mass of humanity, where's the diversity in that? Everything that makes the different races unique will be obliterated.
It's Orwellian newspeak. When they talk about diversity, they mean lack of diversity. They want homogenization.
Well, so basically, and this is obviously Memphis is a southern city, and there's still some traditional
mores
here. And the parents said, this is inappropriate. This is not anything we want you to do. So what did the young lady do? Well, she went to GoFundMe and accused her parents of racism, put it out there in public. The national media picked up on it. The father said he was cutting her off if she didn't end the relationship, which is a very understandable to take. And she put it up on GoFundMe. The national media caught on to it. So far, she's raised $35,000.
It's now over $40,000 to go to college where she can defy her parents. So what was it that Shakespeare said? Sharper than a serpent's tooth is an ungrateful child.
That's good, Keith. Well, this is a tragic situation for a couple of reasons. Number one, the relationship and the lack of respect for the wishes of the parents while still living at home. And number two, the fact that she would not humiliate the parents. The parents did nothing wrong. The parents did everything right, in fact, as far as I'm concerned. But to take it public and know what the media would do to the parents, and even if she was naive enough to not believe the media would take these actions, now that it's happened, what has she done? Nothing but more of the same.
Well, think of it in these terms again. What would the reaction be if a black girl's black parents protested her dating a white man?
You'd never hear about it.
Well, you have heard about it before. You've heard about it in the rantings of H. Rapp Brown and Stokely Carmichael and others who said that that was a race traitor to the black race and that these people are to be shunned and whatnot. But, of course, one, it would be reported as a plus, not a minus, by the mainstream prostitutes. They would be saying that this is perfectly understandable in light of race relations in the United States, and they would basically be applauding the black parents in that situation. Instead, they vilified these people. This daughter has basically set her parents out to dry. She's been the victim of propaganda. I can tell you about these type of schools because my own children went to them. They have all sorts of Pavlovian incentives for the kids to become liberals. They have these little organizations like Bridges and little curriculums like Facing History in Ourselves, in which they basically try to convince white people, particularly young white girls, that they're racist if they would not consider freely dating with people of other races. And then when they protest that they're not, they get an invitation to go out on a date that night with some person that's not a member of their race. Now, that's a personal thing for people, but I'm telling you, you know, that's a choice to be made. But why are black parents allowed to protest that, but white parents are not. That's the double standard that we face in America. It's fine for other groups to have a sense of racial solidarity, but white people, heaven forbid that they should have any sense of racial consciousness or solidarity whatsoever. As James said, a lot of people would rather their grandchildren look like them rather than someone else. That apparently is a hate crime, according to the prostitutes of the United States as currently configured. Hopefully, we will have some true diversity, not only racially, but of thought and of speech in the new Trumpian America, where people can express themselves without being subjected to vilification like this.
Well, and the degeneracy of all of this, this is just such a tragic story. I hate to see this happening to the parents, number one, with what's going on with the relationship that they're opposed to, but number two, to be crucified by the press for taking an absolutely defensible and righteous position on this issue is just so, so sad for the parents. And then this ungrateful brat, she goes to the most expensive school in Memphis, and God knows, I'm sure her parents provided for everything that she's ever wanted for. If they're going to send her to a school like that, I mean, she hadn't been wanting.
She didn't grow up in a double wide, I assure you that.
No, she grew up in Collierville, the story reads, which is one of the most expensive areas to live in Shelby County. And this is how she repays them at the end of her years at home. This is how she repays them by not only defying them, but publicly humiliating them and for potentially ruining their careers. How far this is going
to
go.
But you see, the child has succumbed to the psychological conditioning that, unfortunately, all of our children are subjected to in schools, public schools, private schools. It makes no difference in the entertainment industry. Basically, if you take the politically correct view, you're patted on the head. If you take a politically incorrect view, then you're beaten with a stick. As you can see, the girl is being patted on the head because she's doing what political correctness mandates. On the other hand, her parents are being beaten with the stick because they're not politically correct. So much for diversity of opinion in America today.
Well, and I think the odds are pretty good that this isn't going to be her forever companion. What are the odds of this black guy? Now, he's already in college at Clemson University, the story reads. She's still here in Memphis. So what do you think the odds are that these two lovebirds are going to make it together, get married, and live happily ever after? Not very good, to say the least.
Celebrating their 50th wedding anniversary.
I don't see that happening, but the relationship with her parents will forever be tainted now as a result of this, and that's something, and that's going to be a hurt and a pain that can never be erased, all because she was self-indulgent enough.
Well,
she got annoyed that her parents didn't give her what she wanted in this, and that they were trying to be parents.
This is no casting of aspersions on her black boyfriend, but statistics prove in America that a white woman is 12 times more likely to be beaten up or killed by her significant other if that person is a black person, okay? That's cold, hard facts. It's not pleasant. I wish it were not the case, but those are the U.S. Department of Justice statistics on that issue. Now, maybe her parents know about this at least at some instinctive level, and they'd like to protect their daughter.
Well, they don't have to have a reason at all. And here's another thing. I mean, it would be the same thing if she was a lesbian. I mean, that's another cause du jour now. Being a lesbian is equal to or greater than being a heterosexual. So if she had a lesbian relationship, it would be the exact same thing. They would righteously put a foot down to it.
She'd get money from the weirdos out on the left coast.
And the press would be presenting her as some sort of a hero.
Some new Joan of Arc.
The bigotry of her intolerant parents. I mean, it would be the same thing, interracial, lesbian.
Well, do you remember The Help, the movie The Help, in which Catherine Stockett, the author has, Skeeter. That's the Emma Stone character, Skeeter, who basically is swimming against the current in the civil rights era South and advocating for the black maids. Well, in that movie, Skeeter's mother, the intolerant one, cast as the parents in this little morality play portrayed in the Memphis newspaper, even questions whether her daughter's sexual preference is heterosexual. And that's a very obvious effort to draw a link or a bridge between homosexual rights and black rights or civil rights, however you want to see it. See, it all comes, we're being constantly bombarded with this type of propaganda, and I'm sure that this girl has been if she's been doing all the things you're supposed to do to burnish your resume, joining bridges, joining facing racism in our self classes and stuff like this, she has succumbed to that brainwashing.
And there's not much more her parents could have done to protect her from this reality, sending her to an all-girls private school. But I'd be dead gum if it didn't.
You know, the left is winning the culture war.
Hey, well, at least in this case, we're going to turn it around. Hey, we'll be back with one last story and a busy night on the political cesspool.
As a parent, is receiving a faith-based, character-focused education for your children difficult to find? Do you believe that godly principles should be a central component in your child's education? Imagine a school where faith and integrity are at its center, where heritage and responsibility instill character. For over 40 years, American Heritage School has been educating both hearts and minds, bringing out academic excellence. This is the school where character and embracing the providence of a living God are fundamental, where students' national test scores average near the 90th percentile. With American Heritage School's Advanced Distance Education Program, distance is no longer an issue. With an accredited LDS-oriented curriculum from kindergarten through 12th grade, your children can attend from anywhere in the world. American Heritage School will prepare your child for more than a job. It will prepare them for life. To learn more, visit American-Heritage.org. That's American-Heritage.org.
Liberty is not free. Its costs are innumerable. Without monetary funding, the valiant efforts of freedom-loving Americans become diminished or outright defeated. We present a solution, the Give Me Liberty Fund. The plan is quite simple. Invite individual Americans to contribute less than a dollar a day. These monetary funds are used to promote liberty-minded media, organizations, events, candidates, movements, and speakers. In the spirit of transparency, all expenditures are published. Patriotic business owners provide discounted products and services to Give Me Liberty Fund members. Our greatest strength is in numbers. Go to GiveMeLibertyFund.com and become part of the solution today. GiveMeLibertyFund.com. Participate in the peaceful restoration of the greatest and freest country in the world.
Hello everyone, James Edwards here. Are you sick and tired of liberals and race hustlers and the media calling you a racist just because you oppose Obama's policies? Well, my friend, those days are over. After you read Racism Schmacism, you'll never again fear being called the R word. I invite you to discover why every conservative in America needs a copy of my explosive new book. Racism Schmacism has received much critical acclaim and will equip you with the key to unlock their socio-political nuclear bomb once and for all. Order your copy today by visiting the official website of the Political Cesspool radio program, thepoliticalcesspool.org. Proceeds of each sale go to help keeping our award-winning show on the air, and they make great gifts for your conservative friend or family member. Buy Racism Schmacism today at www.thepoliticalcesspool.org.
Welcome back. To get on the show, call us on James's Dime at 1-866-986-6397.
Okay, last thing to say about this story we were covering in the previous segment. Of course, now the parents are saying, well, it wasn't about race and some of this other stuff, but parents ought to have a preference with regard to who their children choose as mates and who their children date and who their children marry. If you don't have, Keith said this in the break, if you don't have a preference, you're not a good parent. And what if it had been a white guy that they didn't like for any reason or no reason? I mean, a parent has a right to make those decisions for children who still live at their house.
It's called the grandmother effect. They used to have it. You don't seem to have it as much. And lo and behold, we have a 50% divorce rate. Basically, grandmothers would get their granddaughters to the side and say, you may think Jimmy is a better choice, but actually Joe is a better choice than Jimmy, and here's why. Grandmothers and mothers and fathers used to give this type of advice to their daughters and their sons about potential mates. And it probably prevented a lot of miscues. You know, what would it be better to bite your tongue and let your child marry someone who was unsuited to them, have several children, and then be divorced? And the children would basically, you know, that they would have lost their best opportunity to make the best choice in their life. You know, quite frankly, you know, a woman with two children and whatnot is not the same as a girl, you know, in her late teens or early 20s getting married. And it's a shame to have invested all that time, effort, and energy in a relationship that your parents knew didn't have good prospects for a
honor
good
that father, that mother. I mean, again, once again, Keith, honor that father, that mother.
That your years may be long on the earth or something, it says, right?
It goes on in this story. I'm reading toward the end now. What this one commenter, who are they interviewing? An associate professor at Rhodes College. And the director of the school's African Studies program said that this young lady, what she's done is a testament to her brave stand against racism. No, I mean, obviously what she has done here, she's an insolent brat, an ungrateful brat, someone who is dishonoring her mother and father, and she doesn't deserve to be lauded. She should be scorned
it reminds me of the Tuies in the Blind Side movie of the Blind Side fame, where the wife basically threw her father under the bus and said that he was a racist. Why? Because when the busing order came down in Memphis, he took her out of a public school and put her in a private school. She conveniently neglected to mention that the private school he sent her to is the exact same private school that she sends her children to and sent Michael Orr and Greg Hardy to. So consequently, which are the two black football
Which was
players.
The school that I went to.
Right. Well, see, somehow her parents are racist for doing the same thing she did, but of course, racism is the furthest thing from her mind. Well, you know, if you believe that, see us after the show. There's a bridge in Brooklyn we'd like to sell you.
You brought one more story in. We'll shift gears one last time tonight. Memphis Pair launches study of propaganda. Well, I hope they're studying the commercial appeal. Here's the story. When Donald Trump delivers, this is from last week, so it's dated, when his inaugural address on Friday, two Memphians will be listening with a singular, if unusual, focus, trying to hear not so much the specific plans of the nation's 45th president, but the language devices and themes he uses to promote them. Veteran filmmaker, author, producer, and photographer Willie Bearden and longtime producer, editor, and screenwriter George Larimore this week launched a television and online venture called Propaganda TV. Well, there's plenty of things that are propaganda that they can...
What TV is not propaganda?
Right. Now? An exploration of how propaganda permeates U.S. politics, culture, and media. It's available online at propagandatv.net and can soon be viewed on television on a Roku channel as well as Apple TV and Amazon Fire. Geared toward history buffs and political junkies, it features a collection of films culled from the National Archives in which the government tried to mobilize the public during such periods as the Great Depression, World War II, and the Cold War. I like how they go back there to try to find propaganda, but nothing in recent history when it's all against America and white interests. Other films in the collection were used to shape opinion on subjects ranging from drugs to sexual morality to UFOs. What we wanted to do is take a look at propaganda. Propaganda is there to make you believe something, to do something, to buy something, said Bearden, who is perhaps best known for his documentary films on Memphis subjects that include Overton Park and Elmwood Cemetery. It's just so blatant that propaganda rules. Okay, Keith. Well, yeah, propaganda rules, but I bet not the way that he's trying to uncover it. Why did I read that?
Well, it shows the obtuseness of the left. They can see the mote in their neighbor's eye, but not the piece of lumber in their own. Basically, everything, you know, it's like the alarm being sounded now about fake news. Fake news is what the mainstream media has specialized in basically since the beginning of the civil rights movement in the 50s. See, you had no alternative media then. You didn't see these black demonstrators spitting on the police or throwing cups of urine at them or throwing dog feces on them to try to get them stirred up. All you saw were these neatly dressed people, you know, with horn-rimmed glasses and white shirts and single-colored ties and single-colored pants and everything, not a zoot suit in the bunch. This was the product of the Highlander Folk School, which was a Paris island of civil rights workers. All of the big names were funneled through there to learn how to manipulate public opinion. For what purposes? For the purposes of propaganda, so that they could show, you know, the still almost holy footage of flickering footage of police dogs and fire hoses being used on the demonstrators, so they could portray the opponents of leftism as being bad and the proponents of leftism being righteous and good and holy. That's all happened in my lifetime, and it continues to go on today, but now suddenly the left is discovering there is such a thing as fake news. Fake news is the real news that is reported by the right.
Well, I hate to end on this particular note, Keith, but one of our loyal listeners has just sent me a story, and I'll ask you your advice on this, Counselor. A federal judge has just enacted a stay on Donald Trump's Muslim ban. So what are the odds that all this gets tied up in the courts into oblivion?
Well,
Or can Trump do like Lincoln? I mean, Lincoln's supposed to be such a great president. Can Trump jail legislatures and just run roughshod and... Maybe that's
or can he do
now.
Like his hero Andrew Jackson, who told the Supreme Court, Mr. Marshall, that's John Marshall, the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court at that time, has made his decision, now let him enforce it.
Of course,
it.
This isn't the Supreme Court that executed this stay or issued this stay. It was just some, I'm sure, judicial activist.
What they always do is they shop the courts. They find the most liberal judge they can. Like, remember when California voted in a referendum against gay marriage. And what did the left do? They shopped it to a homosexual judge in San Francisco who, what a surprise, decided that he was in favor of gay marriage.
Yeah, he found the nugget in the law that he could interpret just right, I'm sure.
And then
and no bias.
Then it gets appealed to the most liberal circuit in the United States, the Ninth Circuit, which, oh, what a surprise, they affirmed the trial court. And then it goes to the U.S. Supreme Court,
okay, but
finally.
You're exactly right. Everybody knows about
and
judicial
that,
activism.
That process takes years. That's like 4 or 5 years.
We all know about judicial activism. The question is this going to stop Trump?
No, I don't think it's going to stop Trump. I think
is it going to stop the Muslim ban?
Well, no, because, see, this is something different from the gay marriage thing. This has to do with national security, and he could be invoking his powers as the executive to do that. So it's a matter of whether or not he wants to push the envelope and do that, but he could if he wanted to. This is like, you know...
Can he disregard the court and continue to ban Muslims?
Well, he could because, you know, it's like the Japanese internment in World War II when Franklin Delano Roosevelt, that great liberal icon, decided to go through
How
with this.
How can a court even rule that a Muslim has a right to come here and just crash the party?
Well, the Supreme Court has basically run roughshod over the Constitution and its common sense meaning. But they always seem to find, they pretend that they're the protectors of the law when they are flagrantly in violation of stare decisis, like the Brown decision was a violation of stare decisis. They always find that there's some exception. They'll do this here, but because this has to do with public safety and
rule of law, we already have the law on our side in this case.
Well, he could say, you know, I am going to not, you know, I'm going to invoke my special powers because this is the equivalent of a war that's being waged against the American people, all of this Islamic terrorism, and I'm going to invoke. I'm not stayed.
It's like you said, you can't get, you're going to shop this around. You can't allow just one random judge to overrule the will of the people of the president. All right, but, well, we're out of time. We'll keep an eye on this. We'll follow up with you next week. What a great night in Cesspool, ladies and gentlemen. God bless you. We'll see you then. PoliticalCesspool.org.